the day we were getting on, it was September 18th, I remember. We were sitting in here just kind of waiting for him to show up, and I saw Cindy, who's a volunteer through CPL that we work with really closely, kind of walking up with this little, like, perfect little puppy, and I was like, oh my god, like, that's Owen. Like, it was absolutely, like, the best day ever when we got him. It was so fun. And then he pooped on my roommate's rug then.
My name is Avin Nati.
My name is Matt Post.
And my name is Hannah Berline, and we're first-year students in the dog course here at Lafayette College. A previous Dogs of Lafayette interview in 2016 spoke with the original Doghouse students about their experience. We decided to check in with them again 2 years later and find out what the current residents were up to. The two students we interviewed, Kate and Juliana, live in the Doghouse, a Lafayette College living and learning community. Students in the Doghouse raise puppies for Canine Partners for Life, who, according to their website, train service dogs, home companion dogs, residential companion dogs, and courthouse companion dogs to assist individuals who have a wide range of physical, neurological, and cognitive disabilities. Currently, the Doghouse has 3 dogs that include 2 tan Labrador littermates, Owen and Leah, and a 2-year-old black lab named Sapphire.
You want to know more about dog training?
So for the puppies, at least, we're doing their socialization training so they can then go on to become service dogs, which is basically just, like, their very basic training. We make sure that they know their, like, simple commands, like sit, down, kennel. And we try and make sure that they will be attentive to the person who's handling them rather than kind of being distracted by things in their environment. So we do, like, the very kind of ground level for the puppies. Sapphire, on the other hand, our home companion, we're just kind of getting her acclimated to a home environment.
We then wanted to learn about some specific examples of the types of training that the residents use.
We use a clicker training. So if we, like, when we're, what we do is we'll do click and treat. So we'll say, like, Leah, sit. Then when she sits, we'd click our thing. And it would just make, like, a clicking noise, and then we treat her for it. So that's how she knows, like, what she's doing is getting a reward.
According to Alexandra Horowitz in Inside of a Dog, dogs mostly learn by listening to instructions and rarely learn from imitation. So using the clicker training is a step in the right direction in making sure that puppy learning is effective. The Whole Dog Journal also stresses that clicker training is not a permanent presence. Instead, it should be used only during early training and should be reinforced with treats.
The uniform that the dogs wear tells them that it's training time.
Her gentle leader, which is the thing that goes over their mouth, that's, like, not a muzzle. That's just, it guides their body. So when they move, like, everything moves together. So nothing, like...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's, everyone thinks they're muzzles, but they're, like, they can do anything. They can eat, drink, sniff, whatever, in the gentle leaders. But, so that's, like, their equipment they wear. They wear the vest, the gentle leaders, and the leash.
While the training at times sounds easy and intuitive, often it can be quite challenging.
It took me 20 minutes to walk to Gilbert's with Leah from here yesterday because she just wouldn't walk. And sometimes you have to, like, you always want to end on a positive note of the training. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you just have to be like, all right, we'll work on this later.
We asked Juliana about how she balances her schoolwork and the dogs, especially when one of the dogs are in class with her.
It's kind of... You really have to focus on what's going on in class, obviously, but focusing on the dog, too, is important and making sure that they're doing all the commands that we taught them and that they're, like, doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Dear Theodosia, what to say to you? You have my eyes, you have your mother's name. When you came,
Sapphire has been at the doghouse for the longest, having come to the house at the beginning of the year. Unlike the puppies, Sapphire failed a crucial hip exam, disbarring her from continuing training as a full-blown support dog. However, according to Kate, Sapphire will have a different job in her future.
She's going, I think, to a family with twins with special needs of some sort.
Sapphire will act as a home companion for these twins. Canine Partners for Life define their home companion dogs as dogs who serve as well-trained companions for people with a wide range of physical, cognitive and neurological challenges. Comfort, companionship, motivation, and sometimes skills useful in some environments are provided by CPL home companion dogs. According to Jeffrey Masson, dogs are one of the few species that can form meaningful cross-species relationships. Being able to make these cross-species relationships makes dogs valuable service animals.
Sapphire, she's very, like, calm and serene. She's kind of comforting to be around because she's just, like, so chill. So chill, I guess.
Despite Sapphire being so chill, there may be some concern about a dog becoming an emotional support for a family. In class, we recently read Jessica Pierce's Run, Spot, Run, in which Pierce poses the question, what do animals need to be emotionally healthy? According to Kate, Sapphire is somewhat of a weird dog already.
Sapphire is a little bit weird in that she doesn't love, like, affection and stuff, so it's a little bit tougher.
Using Sapphire as a general example raises a somewhat ethical question. Should we, as humans, make a dog that does not like affection enter into a profession where they will be required to act as a pillar of affection and support? Martha C. Nussbaum's essay on moral status offers some insight to this ethical question. She writes, "Each form of life is worthy of respect, and it is a problem of justice when a creature does not have the opportunity to unfold its valuable power, to flourish in its own way, and to lead a life with dignity."
Raising animals to act in service of humans is not as clear-cut of an issue as it may appear. While Nussbaum's idea of flourishing does play a role into service animals, many of these animals go on to live fulfilling lives and are loved by their clients and respected by them.
Both the dogs and humans are affected by each other's presence. The dogs are impacted by the love and the training that the residents of the doghouse provide.
The residents of the house are impacted just the same, even more from the opportunity to have a role in these dogs' lives. To close our interviews with Kate and Juliana, we asked them what they have gained from their experience of being in the doghouse.
I think the dogs have helped me just become less stressed at school.
Juliana's answer spoke to the importance of the human-dog bonding. One benefit of being reduction in stress due to the increase in oxytocin levels of both parties. Oxytocin is a chemical that, when released, results in feelings of happiness. So it didn't come as a surprise when Juliana mentioned that her bond with the dogs does the same for her.
Well, Juliana's answer demonstrated the scientific benefits. Kate's answer speaks to the bigger picture, the emotional impact of living in the doghouse.
It's been honestly, like, really kind of astounding. Like, it's a lot to be responsible for these dogs in the first place as a college student. Like, it's a ton of responsibility to take on to, like, have to look after someone who isn't yourself and, like, remember to feed them and, like, give them their meds if they need them. But then to look at it from, like, a bigger picture that we're kind of, like, taking on this responsibility that these dogs will, if we train them well enough, they will go on and, like, really benefit someone's life. It's, like, totally humbling.